National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The Church in the United States is welcoming thousands of new Catholics into our family of faith this Easter. It is a time of joy, anticipation, and welcome. This week on Register Radio, we're joined by several new members of the Church and hear their stories of conversion and their journey to the Catholic Church. And then, theologian and Register contributor Larry Chapp helps us to remember that in Holy Week, life's indignities reveal our eternal dignity. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, Vice President, Editorial Director of EWTN News and host of Register Radio, joined as always by my co-host Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. How are you, Shannon?
I'm well, Matthew. Thank you.
I hope you had so far a blessed Holy Week.
Yes, it has been. It's a great time of year for us.
Well, over the last weeks, the Register has been covering the remarkable trend of record numbers of people here in the United States who have entered the Church over the last few years and who are joining this year. This is part of a wider trend that we're also seeing in Europe as well. And I know we've had some pretty remarkable stories about new Catholics, people who have come into the Church, either being baptized and confirmed or just entering into full communion with the Church. Every new Catholic has a story to tell and part of a deeply personal and very poignant journey into Catholicism. And we're delighted to welcome one of them, Dylan Ingham, who is 25 years old from Rhode Island, who's being welcomed this Easter. And I think both Shannon and I are very, very happy to talk with you, Dylan. And first of all, welcome to the Church.
Thanks so much, Matthew. I appreciate it.
Well, I know that you've already been part of EWTN News coverage. Coming up, we're going to be talking with you, I know, on EWTN News Nightly and through We Are at the Register. I think it gives people a sense of not just the importance of new Catholics, of people coming into the Church, but helping all of us to understand your journey. So let's introduce you a little bit as to who you are and where you're from.
I'm from Rhode Island, primarily. I was born and raised in Rhode Island. I went to high school here. I spent a couple of years in Massachusetts at Northeastern University, where I got a bachelor's degree in data science and finance. And religiously, I don't really have a background in any faith in particular. My parents weren't religious. I never went to any sort of church or mosque or synagogue or anything like that. It was really around when I became an adult and started attending college that I had my own sort of like personal, I guess, conversion experience. Like growing up in high school, I was a materialist, basically. That was the ideology of the public school system. So it was a system where you would discuss and learn about the nature of biology and chemistry and physics, but it was always in reference to kind of a material framework that was based in chaos. So I don't know if you guys have heard of like nominalism as a viewpoint, but that's kind of what like the public school system and the college system espoused. So yeah.
Dylan, the scientific background you have is so interesting. Tell us a little bit about that transition, you know, from a very scientific, a very materialistic perspective to being open to faith. I mean, can you point to anything in particular? I know you did a lot of reading early on in this process.
Well, one of the big, like, fundamental shifts for me was understanding what I think about as, like, my stack of assumptions. So I think, like, even if you're an empiricist or materialist, you still believe that words are tied to like fundamental meanings, because otherwise you couldn't communicate effectively with anyone. So I had accepted that sort of framework where words were tied to meaning, but I didn't realize that in doing so, there's sort of an element of intellectual pride there, where I was taking certain things to be true, like theory of evolution or the theory of materialism. And I was rejecting other things like the idea of a soul or the idea of the creator God. So once I really checked my assumption stack, I realized that I believed in the meaning of words. And I believed that, you know, we could come to understandings, but I just had rejected the idea of anything being outside of specifically materialism, because that's all I'd been taught.
Yeah, and one of the aspects of a nominalist or positivist outlook is the rejection of the idea of certain universal concepts, right? Such as justice, goodness, holiness. So what was your own sort of lived experience in realizing that that's not exactly how it works?
I don't know how this happened, but I had this realization one day that pride was sort of an assumption about what you think you know, but cutting you off from what you could potentially know. So pride was, in a way, like a limiting factor on your own intellect. And once you accepted humility, you accepted that you really didn't know exactly what the framework of reality was. And your capacity for thought was something you were assuming anyway. It opened me up to believing in, well, at the very least, it allowed me to consider alternative explanations of materialism. And so once I dug into those perspectives, it became pretty clear to me through like the theories of neo-Darwinian evolution, or even just the coefficients of physics, or like subatomic particles, that it was totally valid to believe that there was a creative behind that. Like the fact that there is direct coefficients to physics, the fact that there is certain laws that govern subatomic particles, like that doesn't imply chaos. That actually implies a creative force behind it. So pretty quickly, once I accepted that I was being prideful in my assumptions, I was able to accept the ideas of deism, you could say, right? Like a vague sort of deism, the idea that the material world is actually created by an intentional force, as opposed to just being sort of an overlapping of chaos that our minds happened to prescribe patterns onto. So that was right around the first like year or so of college. Once I realized like none of my classmates really had any like basis for their morality, and in fact didn't really have morality because they had this sort of materialist viewpoint. So once I accepted and humbled myself to the idea that there could be a creator force, it opened me up to the concept of like, how could that apply to humans in particular? So, I mean, that was where I guess you could say free will came in, because I accepted, okay, so there's a creator force behind matter, but how does it relate to humans? And one thing that was pretty self-evident to me, besides the reality of creation, right? Like besides the fact that we live in an ordered cosmos, the other relevant thing was that I have free will, right? It seems pretty apparent that I can make choices and that I feel some sort of value judgment around those choices. And that belief, for me, was only validated by the incarnation of God as man. So the only way to validate human free will was the idea that God was incarnate as man and actually transfigured that free will in a, I guess you could say, like a cosmic legitimacy. So like the creator redeemer paradigm, like where it's like God as father is creator, God as son is kind of redeemer. That just really intuitively made sense to me. Like if creation is a product of God and free will is a product of God, then those two things are only really answered by the creation and redemption of the God-man specifically, right? Jesus Christ. Some reason, that view really stuck with me.
Well, it's a fascinating story of how the discovery of natural revelation can lead us to God. And I love your story. I also want to introduce one other guest that we're very happy to welcome. That's Ashwin Manure. He's 21, a senior at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, who entered the church last year. So Ashwin, welcome to Register Radio.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's a blessing and honor to be here, so I really appreciate it.
Well, I know that you contributed to some of our articles, living out your experience. So let's start a little bit with you, too, about your own journey to the church.
I guess to start off, I was really raised around pretty little faith. My mom's Lutheran, my dad's atheist. And so, I could probably count on two hands the amount of times I went to church that was not Christmas or Easter growing up. And so it wasn't really until I got to college that I really desired to know who Jesus was and to know who God was. And so I kind of started exploring that and first found myself going to non-denominational churches. And, this time was very much like living the college life too. I was in a fraternity. I was kind of pulled into vice in a lot of ways, but I knew that I wanted more and that I wanted to find fulfillment. And as I started to learn more about Jesus and who he was, originally through this non-denominational church, I recognized that there was some level of truth here and goodness here, but I always felt like I was kind of empty and like there was more that I desired. Then come my junior year of college, I lived with a guy who I'd known since the beginning of my time in college. And he was born and raised Catholic. And there was just one night where some of my other roommates and I were just out on a drive talking and kind of had a conversation about faith, and kind of one of my other roommates and I, who had both been going to this non-denominational church, just kind of addressed this like kind of desire for more that we weren't seeing in the current church we were in. And from there, Drew, my other roommate, kind of talked about his journey with the Catholic faith and kind of a reversion that he had had. And for the first time, I think the Catholic Church had spoken to me in a really unique way. Like, I'd been to Mass before and just didn't really understand it. And kind of coming to that point where I kind of heard of, the institution, the church being what it is and what it houses, and that it houses truth and the fullness of truth, really spoke to me in a unique way in that moment. So it took me a little bit longer, but then started going to OCIA. And I think really the first time I deeply encountered the Lord was sitting in adoration. I just remember feeling just this pure joy and peace and comfort, and all these kind of wounds and brokenness in my heart really felt like they were seen and known for the first time. Yeah. And I think it was just a journey of discovering truth, and it's continued to be that. And it is going to continue to be that. And walking with others has been amazing in that. I made the decision to be a focus missionary earlier, or at the end of last year. So I'm very excited for that. I'll be walking with men in Greek life. And so I think there's just a lot of beauty and ability to speak truth into their lives and into the vices they struggle with, and show them that they're made for goodness, and they're made by a good and infinite and ever-loving God. So yeah, it's a little bit about me, I guess.
Yeah, Ashwin, you came into the church last year. So you were in one of the register stories that talked to kind of year one Catholics, right? So Dylan, who's on the other line, is coming into the church at Easter. What wisdom can you share with Dylan about your first year as a Catholic?
Yeah, I think there's quite a few things. One, Dylan, congrats. Welcome home. I'm incredibly excited for you. And thanks. I will be praying for you. We're kind of near the the beginning of the real journey, but kind of, yeah, the fun begins. And so I'm excited for you. I guess like one of the biggest things I've learned over the course of the past year is just the importance of growing in the virtue of prayer and the practice of prayer. I think that so often when we first feel called to the church, there's the beauty of God giving us the consolation to draw close to him. But I think that the reality of the faith is that consolation isn't always present. And you may have already experienced that. And maybe you're kind of sitting in that consolation right now, or maybe you kind of have felt God like not pull away a little bit, but like actually desire that we draw closer to him in our own choices and actions. And I think that the one thing I've learned over the course of the past year is like, actually we must pursue him in prayer and pursue him deeply in prayer. I think that in that, and over the course of the past year, I've lived an increasingly sacramental life. Like I have, you know, I've been praying a holy hour every day. I've been going to daily Mass every day, praying the rosary every day. And it's like, those don't come in an instant. I think those have been the development over the course of time, but it's like the closer we draw to God, one, the better we are and the better off we are in having known him and continuing to know him. But two, also just that reality of, you know, not every moment with God is consolation, but we're actually like the faith best lived out is when God doesn't feel close to us, but we choose him anyhow. So yeah, I don't know. Hopefully that's
an answer. That's great. Dylan, let's hand it back to you. So any questions for Ashwin? By the way, it's not required that you become a focus ministry missionary, but that is always an option. That is always an option. Yeah. What questions might you have for Ashwin?
So yeah, the idea of consolation and the presence or lack thereof is an interesting point. Do you feel after being, I guess, baptized and receiving First Communion, like, are your motives different? Like now that you're involved in now that you're actually part of the body of Christ, now that you're, you know, participating maybe even daily in the sacrament of the Eucharist, like does that change how you live your faith as opposed to, you know, beforehand when it might have been more of a reorientation of your intellect and your will, and now it becomes something that's more communal? Like is there different advice you would give at those different phases? Because that's sort of what I'm about to cross over into in the next few days.
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. I think one thing I've been praying about a lot actually recently is the idea that I don't think there ever comes a point where we're not reordering our intellect and our will more fully, right? I think like in our brokenness and in our concupiscence, like we are always drawing closer to a more perfect order, but that's not something that we ourselves can reach, right? Like we're called not to be perfect, but to be made perfect. But I think that in that regard, like over the course of the past year, it's been really, really interesting to pray about actually. It's like, you know, I had this idea and concept of the Eucharist as I first approached it. And I remember first time I received the Eucharist, it's beautiful. And it's just an incredibly intimate moment with God. But honestly, it's like, as we continue to pursue him in prayer and in the sacraments, it only gets more and more intimate. And I think that's the beauty of the faith is like, you know, I think that in the last 3 months alone, I've had more like quote unquote spiritual growth than I did in the first 9 of being Catholic. And it's not like I didn't have a ton there. I just think that the closer we draw to God, the more we grow over the course of time. Like the growth isn't perfectly linear, right? I think like as we grow closer to him, as we continue to like to know his will for us and to say yes and to continue to ask those questions of what does it mean to live with you and to live in accord with your will and to ask God the purpose of, or like to ask God most fundamentally, like, who are you? Who am I in relation to you? And what is your purpose for my life? Like, as we continue to ask those questions and continue to ask all the questions that come from that, I think we draw closer to him. And so I think like, honestly, the biggest thing is that your concept of the Eucharist will change as you continue to receive it. But it's like, as long as you continue to approach that prayerfully and with, you know, like just with the utmost like love and reverence for it, like you just begin to see the beauty of it ever more. And I think like each time I approach the Eucharist, it's like, yeah, I just feel like my eyes are opened even more to the free gift and the beauty of the gift that God gives us in himself and how freely he gives that to us, having no need for us, but loving us that much. I hope that's an okay answer. I don't know if that leads to any other questions. Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
That was a fantastic answer. And I know that we are very grateful to both of you for answering Christ's call, for joining the church. And be assured, Dylan, especially, that you are in our prayers over these next days as you come into the church. And for both of you, our continuing prayers as you continue your journey in faith.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. I appreciate all three of you. Yeah, very good advice. Very good.
Well, this was a great conversation, and this one's going to be a memorable edition, I think, of Register Radio, so thank you both. Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on EWTN Radio. Next, we talk with Register contributor Larry Chapp on Holy Week, frailty, and the cross. Stay tuned to Register Radio.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. I'm Matthew Bunsen here with Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. Well, in a remarkable commentary for the Register, theologian and Register contributor Larry Chapp has given us a rather searing reflection on Holy Week, that in the frailty of old age and the reversals of family life, the cross of Jesus Christ comes into focus as the true measure of human dignity. Its title is, In Life's Indignities Reveal Our Eternal Dignity. And Larry joins us. So welcome to Register Radio again, Larry.
Hey, glad to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, your piece could not have been better timed. Here we are, of course, in Holy Week, and I know that was your objective. But I want to read just one line or two from this, because I think it really sets the table for something that you accomplished that is quite remarkable. You write that life is a series of dependencies, and not one of us is truly in any meaningful way an independent being in charge of his or her ultimate destiny. And I don't want to give too much away, because I want to encourage everyone to read your commentary at ncregister.com. But what's the key point you're trying to make here?
I think the key point is that our entire modern culture has inculcated in us this false sense that to be an adult, to be mature, to be your own person means to eliminate dependencies, to be this isolated individual who can have relations with others if he or she so chooses. But ultimately, you are this little isolated island, and success means you've achieved these things sort of all on your own and so on. What life really teaches us is the exact opposite, right? That no matter how independent we might seem, how wealthy, how successful, all those things that our culture holds up as signs of success, no matter any of that, ultimately we are all simply dependent upon a whole series of relations with other people, beginning from our infancy with our parents and on through the entirety of our lives. And thus, human life is defined more by its sense of relational dependency on others than it is by any kind of radical independence.
Yeah, that's a reality that eventually hits home in a big way, as I know it has for you in this situation with your elderly parents. What is the theological or spiritual lesson there, and how does that connect to the theme of Holy Week?
Well, what we see in all of Holy Week is the humility of God, God's descent into the human condition, which then culminates in a rigged trial and torture and ultimate judicial execution, an unjust judicial execution, where Christ submits to all of that in deep, deep solidarity with the human condition out of love for all of us. And that is the pattern of our humanity. What Christ reveals to us isn't just who God is, but who we are. And thus, to be human is to be willing to submit ourselves to a series of dependencies on other people, to submit ourselves to the humility of being cared for by others, to allow ourselves to be cared for by others. Now, Christ, obviously, in his passion, wasn't being cared for by others, but it exemplifies God's deep humility. And that humility is what has to mark our existence as human beings if we're going to imitate Christ. Why the ultimate sin is the sin of pride, the sin of hubris, the sin of thinking that I'm in control of everything when I'm not.
Yeah, Larry, your stress, especially on finding independence, true independence, through dependence, and it really casts a stark light, especially on, as you've been saying, society. And Pope Francis always used the term throwaway culture, but we're also seeing this idea of using assisted suicide and euthanasia as a way not just to rid ourselves of inconvenient people that we don't want to see, but also to rob us of the beauty of the experiences of actually helping others in recognition, too, that we ourselves are dependent.
Yeah, absolutely. We have, in our technocratic society, functionalized human life and made human life into something of value only in an instrumental sense, only insofar as it achieves certain things. But from the unborn to the helpless elderly, we are called as Christians to view life not instrumentally, not functionally, but having an inherent dignity, image and likeness of God. And therefore, we all place moral obligations upon one another. One of the things that we always like to say, I don't want to be a burden on others. Well, of course we're a burden on others. We're meant to be a burden on others, and they're meant to be a burden upon us. And so we are mutually emburdening each other, if that's a word, And this is a reality that is really driven home to me as I'm caring for my 90-year-old mother, my 92-year-old father, and there's a kind of return almost to the dependency of infancy in their lives. And realizing the need to find, for example, a nursing home for my mother that wasn't simply a horrible place that was warehousing old, useless people until it's their time to die. We had a struggle to find a nursing home that would treat my mother with dignity and worth, despite her radical dependency upon others.
Yeah, Larry, you're such a prolific writer. And I'm always interested in how these ideas take shape for you. So can you just explain a little bit of that, of how this piece that you wrote for us kind of evolved in your recent experiences?
Yes. Hi. I was actually, holding a conference here at my house in Scranton for a bunch of followers of my blog. And in the midst of that conference, I got word from my sister that my mother, who was still living at home, she has advanced Alzheimer's, had fallen and broken several ribs and punctured a lung and was in a hospital. So I raced out to Nebraska quickly, which is where my parents live, where I'm from, and discovered, my mom was in very, very bad shape. And it struck me, as I was helping my siblings do things, and pardon the indignity of this, but it's the point of like changing my mother's diapers and adult diapers and those sorts of things. the genesis of this article was in the realization that life had come full circle, that the woman who had changed me when I was an infant and cleaned me when I was helpless was now in need of me doing the same thing for her, was in need of me helping to feed her and clean her. And my father was in need of me helping him to walk because he can barely walk. And man, it just, as I was driving home from Nebraska, I was just so profoundly moved by the experience of my parents willingly submitting themselves to that dependency on their children, and how beautiful life is, even in its indignity like that, because it elicits from us the deepest form of love.
It is the deepest form of love, and you're also giving them dignity in those most crucial moments of their final years. So thank you for that, but also thank you for the lesson that you've given to all of us.
Well, thank you. I'm always pleased and thankful to the Register for publishing my various scribblings, and this one in particular was very near and dear to my heart, obviously.
Well, that piece is In Holy Week, Life's Indignities Reveal Our Eternal Dignity. You can find that at ncregister.com. Well, that's it for Register Radio for this week. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online, again, at ncregister.com. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next week, on behalf of our producer, Michael McCall, Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the Register, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Please take care, God bless, and have a joyous Easter season.